Council to order.
Appreciate you guys making the trip today. I would also like to recognize Mike Haddon as the new executive director. So thank you. Congratulations for that. In addition, I know that, the director had a couple of things he would like to say as well.
I just want to introduce Jacqueline Moore as a new lieutenant over investigations. She is replacing Alex Garcia. We've had that vacancy open for quite some time, but she is the new lieutenant over investigations. So if you have any complaints about me, direct them to her. And ultimately, if you have any complaints about posts, they're her fault. So we just wanted to introduce you to her, and you guys know and worked with her. So we'll move forward.
Thank you. We'll go ahead and start this morning for this September 20th, 2018 session. Also, do we have a motion to approve the minutes for June 14 of 2018?
Moved.
Was that Colonel Rapid?
Yes.
Do we have a second?
Second.
A second by Sheriff Pulsifer. Do we have any further discussion? Seeing none, call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. None opposed? Go ahead and move forward. Quarterly reports from Lieutenant Jacqueline Moore.
So these are our stats from June 1st, 2018 to August 31st, 2018. We received 56 complaints, opened 32 investigations, and held 2 administrative hearings. We closed 3 cases with no action following an investigation and received 7 voluntary relinquishments. The allegations related to those relinquishments are sex on duty, obstruction of justice, DUI, falsification of a government document, assault, sex on duty, lying under Garrity, DUI, possession of a controlled substance, disorderly conduct, intoxication, and interference with a police officer, and then sexual battery. We reviewed 348 applicant backgrounds. 305 of those were basic training, 23 were dispatcher, and 20 were waiver reactivation. Our current caseload is 48 active investigations and 69 open cases. Any questions? Thanks.
Thank you. We'll go ahead and move forward to Satellite Academy audit. Oh, wait, go ahead. Lieutenant Garcia, that's what I was moving to.
Do you want me to start with the satellite audit, or
no,
do you want
go ahead with the quarterly report? Sorry about that.
All right, so this is going to be the same time frame, June 1st, 2018 to August 31st, 2018. Starting May 29th, which was at the end of the month, end of last quarter, we had 335 LEO start. They went to August 9th. They started with 40 in the LEO block, and all 40 graduated and were certified. 336 started June 18th and graduated July 26th through the SFO block. They started with 29 and 24 graduated. 5 of them were departed. 3 were dismissed because of medical injury, and 2 were dismissed because they were not able to pass the end post. 336 LEO started July 30th and graduated September 27th. They started with 37, and 36 are still enrolled in LEO. 1 has been departed. He resigned due to academy injury. 337 SFO started July 16th and graduated August 23rd. They started SFO with 28, 25 of them graduated. 2 were departed, 1 canceled enrollment based off the cadet's decision, and the other one was dismissed based off of agency decision. 337 LEO started August 27th and will graduate October 25th. They started LEO with 33, and as of this point, they have no departures. 338 started August 6th and graduated September 13th. They started SFO with 29, 26 completed SFO, 3 were departed, 1 canceled enrollment based off the cadet's decision. and one was dismissed because of not having a qualifying NPOST score, and another one was dismissed based off of not passing the certification examination. 339 SFO started August 27th. They will graduate October 4th. They started the SFO with 30. 28 are still enrolled, two are departed, one canceled enrollment based off the cadet decision, and one was an agent dismissed based off of an agency's decision to let them go. Our upcoming training classes, 338 LEO, September 17th to November 15th, they currently have 41. 339 LEO will start on October 9th and will graduate December 6th, and they currently have 42 slated to attend that LEO block. To give you an idea as how is the first of the year is shaping up, class 340, which starts January 7th and runs through April 18th, which is the SFO block, we currently already have 21 names for that session. So it's filling up fast, and there are 74 slots that have shown, or departments that have shown interest in wanting a slot in that class that just have not provided a name as of yet. So our overall numbers that are shaping up this year, we have graduated 159 law enforcement officers up to this point. Currently, we have another 152 that are either in the academy right now or are getting ready to start in our upcoming LEO blocks. That will give us, if those numbers hold, that 152, that'll give us a total of 311 graduates out of the LEO block for this year, which I believe last year we were at 240. So a pretty substantial increase and a pretty pretty high demand or demand put on our staff.
We average over the last 5 or 6 years about 200 officers trained. So it shows you the increase in demand that we have here at POST. So and I just want to remind you, since the last meeting, we have 337, which is where departments have come together and provide us resources to put on the training so that it doesn't impact our budget. I've been approached by the Valley Alliance, which is the chiefs in the Salt Lake Valley, to see if what the feasibility would be to have another class like that in November. I'm just trying to get numbers, so if we can get the word out that we may be doing another class, we need to have at least 20 for us to make it worth our while to put that class on. Sorry.
Any questions as far as the basic training goes? All right, as far as in-service goes, in-service for that same period, June 1st to August 31st of this year, POST offered 32 in-service classes. 544 officers attended those training classes. 733 actually enrolled, so for some reason dropped out, weren't able to attend the training. Also, 26 dispatchers were trained. The classes that were offered by POST during this quarter were a defensive tactics instructor phase one and phase two. Also, basic dispatcher course, EVO basic course, EVO instructor course, field training officer course, handgun instructor, instructor development, intox operation research, and intox online research, along with also radar, LIDAR certifications, online research, and full class research. So, any questions as far as that goes? Thank you.
I'm still here. That's what I was saying.
Just kidding. So our two satellite audits this go-round were USU Eastern and Salt Lake County Sheriff's Office. So USU Eastern is right in the middle right now. They just started their, I guess you could say, tele-academy, where they have people down in the Blanding area that are attending their academy via satellite. So they are live streaming the class. They show up to class at the normal time the USU students do, and they get the same training on their physical skills. They've made an agreement to, so those folks down in the Blanding area don't have to go up to Price on all of the physical days. They have a location in Moab that allows them all to meet in Moab to go through the physical skills, such as DT, and when they hit the LEO block, obviously firearms and that type of training, scenario training. Everything seems to be going good. They are looking to branch out even further just from that Blanding area. And they're doing some good things down there. So Director Henry seems to have a handle on what's going to be required of him. Salt Lake County SO ironed out some wrinkles with the sheriff's office as far as our application processing and making sure applications are in a timely manner. Post policy says that those applications have to be in 4 weeks prior to the academy start date. They were kind of lacking in that area. Not necessarily an exception, but just something to work on that'll make things run smoother for Salt Lake County and will help our staff out here when it comes to processing those applications. When we're talking 311 applications that have to go through the support staff, then two investigations, it's a lengthy process. So that's why that 4 months is required prior to them starting the academy. Any questions? I'm done for reals this time.
Thank you. We'll go ahead and move to disciplinary cases. Linda Beattie, if you would like to.
Good morning, Chairman Carpenter, Director Stevenson, members of the council. We have 16 cases today, which might take a little while. The first case is Dennis Anderson. Mr. Anderson, Dennis Anderson was a member of the Department of Corrections. He resigned. The sustained offenses were driving under the influence, carrying a dangerous weapon while under the influence of alcohol, which are Category D offenses. Post recommends a 2-year suspension. The guidelines call for a baseline of 1 year. There is an aggravator in this case, which is a high blood alcohol content, and there were multiple offenses. There are no mitigators. He pled guilty to impaired driving in a criminal court on May 15, 2018. The facts are as follows. On February 23, 2018, Dennis Anderson was driving to his home when he lost control of his vehicle and hit a fence. Anderson was armed with a loaded firearm at the time of the traffic accident. Anderson was arrested for DUI. He provided a breath sample which measured 0.17 blood alcohol content. Anderson resigned from his department, pled guilty to an amended charge of impaired driving. During Garrity interviews with Post and his agency, Anderson admitted he was intoxicated at the time of the traffic accident and was carrying a loaded firearm. He waived his right to a hearing. And would you like an opportunity to speak? Yeah.
Good morning. My name is Dennis Anderson. I'm grateful for your time and for this opportunity to discuss this matter with you and tell you about some things that I've done to change my life. I don't want anything I say to be misconstrued as an excuse for the behavior, for quite frankly, which I'm ashamed and embarrassed about. And that I have maintained from the time that happened is totally my responsibility. I was hired on to corrections May 9th, 2005 as a correctional officer for CUCF. I remember exactly where I was when I got the call and how excited I was for this opportunity and this occupation and the ability to possibly and hopefully change lives and be an example for the better. I reached the position of sergeant after several years, which meant a lot to me because it meant that I could further impact other officers, become a mentor of sorts, and also have the ability to work closer with offenders in certain situations. However, this became a source of anxiety and sometimes depression for me, and though my performance never slipped while I was on duty at the prison, I failed while I was off duty. But I've worked hard the last 7 months to change my life. I've continued working other jobs to support my help support my family. Thank you to my good wife. We've been able to go on. I can go on and on about the negatives of working in a prison, but I don't have to. You already know those. Death, assault, suicide. There was one suicide in particular that affected me a great deal with an inmate I was trying to work with in a lockdown unit. The reality is, though, that I lost myself. I turned to alcohol with the illusion that it would solve the internal problems I was having. And instead, it changed me as a person. I hated everything. I hated everyone. Everything was stupid. It affected my family. And that in itself is bad enough. But on February 23rd, I got behind the wheel of a car while impaired. And though no one was hurt, I risked the lives of others, which is uncharacteristic, unforgivable, and horrific. And it keeps me up some nights still to this day. I'd like to just tell you a few steps I've taken to change. I began meeting regularly with a psychologist and also with a physician, and have a plan in place to help me with my anxiety and depression and stress issues. I've attended a Prime for Life class as mandated, which really opened my eyes to the path I was heading down. Strive to become a better husband and a better father. I'm honest now with my stress and I can talk through it with my wife, and I have a psychologist, which is very important, that I can go and talk to. I've left some friends and colleagues behind that I thought were impacting me negatively, and I've admitted myself that I'm an alcoholic and I cannot go anywhere near it. And this Sunday, the 23rd, will be 7 months that I haven't touched it, and I feel great about the future. I wanted to just, if I could, I didn't want to take up too much time, but it was a shock to most people when this happened because I was so secretive about it. But one thing that I wanted to bring up was the fact that many of my coworkers, who were very supportive and were with me every step of the way, in texts or phone calls, said to me that it was an eye opener for them, that they were headed that way, maybe not with alcohol, but in family situations or dealing with some issues in their own lives. And hopefully what I went through could have helped them. And one thing that never wavered was the support from my supervisors, Warden Nelson, Deputy Wardens Blood and Newman, Director Cook when he was here. Haven't had the chance to meet with Director Haddon, but I hope to. Couldn't have done it without their support. I really, really enjoy being a corrections officer. I love working at CUCF. I made a huge mistake, and I know it. I'd like the opportunity to return, go back to doing the work, and helping other people through tough times, whether it's inmates or coworkers. I'll do it right this time, and I'll do it better. I feel like I'm even better prepared than I was before. Thank you for your time and consideration in this matter.
I need to recuse myself in this particular case. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Is that good now?
Can you hear me? Let the record show that Director Haddon has recused himself.
And counsel, if I could, I'll be brief. Irrespective of the 0.17 breath alcohol level that was addressed, the plea that was entered was to a 0.08. I hope you would take that into consideration.
Any questions for counsel or Mr. Anderson?
Is the two-year suspension on this case less than the 18-month on the Lane matter due to the weapon, the aggravating factor of the weapon?
Less than the, say it one more time for me, please.
There's another case on the calendar today, Lane, also involving a DUI, a similar breath alcohol content. Mm-hmm. That one, the recommendation is an 18-month suspension. Mm-hmm. So I'm just wondering if the extra 6 months is because of the aggravating factor of the firearm in this case.
Lane did not have a firearm. That was the distinction.
Any further questions? Go ahead and call for the motion.
Motion to approve the guidelines as submitted.
I move. Move to accept the recommendation.
Second. Mike Rappich approves, and a second by John Crowley. Do we have any further discussion? Go ahead and call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Seeing none, it passes.
Okay, the next case is Chad Brooks. Is Mr. Brooks here? Is there an attorney for Mr. Brooks here? No. I don't see Mr. Brooks or an attorney. Chad Brooks was an officer with the Department of Corrections. He was terminated in November of 2017. The sustained offense was driving under the influence, a Category D offense, and POST is recommending a two-year suspension. The guidelines call for a baseline of 1 year, but the aggravators in this case are that the alcohol, blood alcohol content, was twice the legal limit. He crashed his vehicle, and there was an outstanding warrant. There were no mitigators. The criminal case status is a bench warrant for the what?
Still got a bench.
He has an outstanding bench warrant for the DUI. The facts are as follows. On August 29th, 2017, Chad Douglas Brooks, a corrections officer, was investigated by an outside agency for driving under the influence. Brooks was seen by two different witnesses driving a silver pickup and hit another vehicle as he attempted to back into a parking stall. The witnesses observed Brooks then pull forward and move into a different stall. Brooks made multiple statements to the investigating officer, admitting he was drunk. When asked to perform the standardized field sobriety tests, Brooks responded with, "You don't need to waste your time." When asked a second time, Brooks shook his head no and stated he was drunk. Brooks was arrested and taken to the local detention center where he provided two breath samples approximately 2 hours after the initial driving incident. The results were 0.227 blood alcohol content and 0.230 blood alcohol content. On March 3rd, 2018, in a post-Garrity interview, Brooks admitted to consuming approximately 5 alcoholic beverages prior to driving his pickup. Brooks admitted he heard a collision as he was parking his vehicle, but was not aware of any damage. On July 12th, 2018, he failed to respond to the notice of agency action, and an order of default was entered. I don't believe anyone is appearing in this case.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Haddon.
Mr. Chairman, I need to recuse myself from this case as well.
Show up to the director.
Director Haddon has recused himself. Do we have a motion?
We have a motion to accept.
Motion to accept by Christy Moore. Do we have a second?
Second. I'd like to make a motion to increase it to 2.5 years.
So should we take the Bruce Bailey's and then, or do a substitute motion? Okay, go ahead, Sheriff Noel.
Considering the circumstances of involving this and the one that we just heard, I don't think they're the same type of case here. I think we need to, I'd like to make a motion to, what is it, 2.5, is that the maximum? That's the motion I'd like to make.
We have a motion to increase that to 2.5 years. Do we have a second on that?
I'll second with a comment. Also, with him having outstanding warrants, not showing that he's holding to a higher standard.
So we have a second from John Crowley. Any further discussion?
Seeing none, I'll call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
We're voting on the 2.5.
Correct. Can we clear on that?
Yep.
Okay, the next case is Kyle Matthew Christensen. Mr. Christensen, are you here? Is there an attorney present for Mr. Christensen? I see no one appearing on this case. Kyle Christensen was an officer with the Harrisville Police Department. He resigned in December of 2017. The sustained offense was driving under the influence, carrying a dangerous weapon while under the influence of alcohol, which are Category D offenses. The baseline is 1 year, and POST is recommending in this case 2.5 years. The aggravators in this case are there was a traffic accident, he was in uniform, and he was driving a marked patrol vehicle. There are no mitigators. The criminal case is pending at this time. On December 2nd, 2017, Kyle Christensen drove to work in his marked patrol vehicle and was dressed in his department uniform, including his department-issued duty belt and firearm. Christensen ran his vehicle into a raised median on his way to work. Christensen's marked patrol vehicle was towed to the department office, where his supervisor smelled the odor of alcohol coming from Christensen. Christensen submitted to a preliminary breath test, which showed positive for alcohol. Later, he submitted to an intoxilizer test, which showed a blood alcohol content of 0.148. He resigned from his department before the completion of their investigation. He did not cooperate with POST. He was not interviewed. He failed to respond to the notice of agency action, and an order of default was entered.
Just double-checking, is Mr. Christensen or his counsel present? I see no one rising. We'll go ahead and call for a motion. Motion from Chief Marlon Stratton.
I move to accept post recommendation of 2.5 years suspension.
Second. And a second from Mike Haddon. Any further discussion? Seeing none, I'll call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Next.
Okay, the next case is Matthew Gregerson, and we have a letter in this case also. I'm sorry? Oh, sneak up on me. Good morning. Good morning. Matthew Gregerson is still employed as a West Jordan police officer. The sustained charge was taking, transferring, selling, or purchasing protected wildlife, a Category E offense. POST recommends a letter of caution. The baseline in this case is a 6-month suspension. There are no aggravators, and the mitigators in this case are that he self-reported to DWR and to the West Jordan Police Department. He did plea in abeyance to taking protected wildlife, and was a $6,000 fine was imposed. On October 17, 2018, Matthew Gregerson was hunting elk with a friend. Gregerson explained they were set up at opposite ends of a meadow, approximately 500 to 600 yards apart. Gregerson said he was notified by the friend via walkie-talkie of an elk to his left. Gregerson said he figured his friend, who was an experienced hunter, had positively identified the animal as an elk. Gregerson said, "I just saw kind of a big animal with antlers, and I sighted in on it." Gregerson fired 2 rounds, killing the animal. When he approached the animal, he realized it was not an elk. It was a moose. He and his friend immediately contacted the proper authorities, helped them locate the animal, and cooperated with their investigation. During the Garrity interviews with his agency and POST, he stated he relied upon the identification of the animal to be an elk by his friend and had inadvertently shot a moose while hunting elk. He entered into a plea in abeyance to the charge of unlawful taking, transporting, selling, or purchasing protected wildlife, a Class B misdemeanor, in January of 18. He received 6 months probation and a $6,000 fine. He waived his right to administrative hearing in this case. Would you like to be heard, sir?
Please.
Yeah.
Very briefly, counsel, thank you. We appreciate the POST has recognized a lot of the mitigators in this case. The animal didn't go to waste. My client dressed it in the field so that it could be given the meat so that it wouldn't be wasted. He paid a significant fine. And He self-reported, as you've heard. He's backed by his agency. This was a simple mistake. We appreciate that. POST is recommending a letter. We think that's appropriate. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Matt Gregerson. I'm happy to answer any questions. Unfortunately, I wish I wasn't here. As my attorney said, it simply was a mistake. There was no intent. If there's any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Any questions for Mr. Gregerson? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and call for a motion.
Motion to accept. Nate Mutter.
Second.
Frank Budd. Any discussion? Hearing none, call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Next.
Okay, the next case is Brandon Heffron. Mr. Heffron? Brandon Heffron is an officer with the Department of Corrections. He's still employed there. The sustained offense in this case was assault, a Category C offense. POST is recommending a two-year suspension. The baseline is a two-year suspension. There are no aggravators and no mitigators. On or about April 26, 2018, Brandon Heffron, a cadet at the POST Law Enforcement Academy, was attending building clearing training. During a training scenario, a fellow cadet reminded Heffron that he needed a functioning flashlight for the training. Heffron shoved the cadet into a wall of lockers and asked, "Are you testing me?" The cadet told POST investigators his head would have been injured if it were not for a face protection mask, which he was wearing on the back of his head at that time. During a Garrity interview with POST, Heffron admitted he was angry and frustrated when he shoved the cadet into the lockers. Heffron said he thought it was okay because the cadet did not express being in pain. On September 7, 2018, Brandon Heffron waived his right to a hearing before an administrative law judge. Mr. Heffron.
Good morning, councilmen and women. Thank you for your time. So, as you are aware, while I was at the academy during a school clearing or a building clearing, me and a fellow cadet that I have known for 8 years, who I consider a friend, got into an argument that we were going back and forth between, some people would say razzing. We just had a conversation, an argument. It got heated. I did push him, and I'm very disappointed with myself in this matter. Yesterday I had the chance to actually hear his testimony when I was with my lawyer, and I was very disappointed with myself having to hear these words from my friend that I caused this pain for him, that he had to go through and had to have talk about this and everything. And I'm hoping to get this behind me and behind us so that I can actually communicate again with him. I haven't talked to him since because I didn't want to look like I was persuading him in any way. But the factors are that I consider him a friend, and I am very disappointed and very grieved about how I made him feel, whether it was physically threatened or mentally or emotionally, that he sustained from this. So that's about the incident. Since then, I have had the great pleasure of being a stay-at-home dad for the last 4 months, which brought more closure to me and made me a better emotionally person. When I had my interview with POST, we talked about how I could be a better emotionally and such, and I think I've gotten better. But there's no excuse for what I did, and I'm not going to excuse myself for that. I believe that the leave that I had, plus the termination that I now had as of this month from my own department, is right cause, and I'm not going to hide behind the fact that we are friends, the fact that there's no excuse. So I'm hoping that I can be able to come back to law enforcement everyone's been asking me what I'm going to do now with my life, and I've been saying that I'm going to just do what I have to do to keep food on the table, because every other job is a job. Law enforcement is a career. It's a calling that I want to have again. So I'm hoping to take this suspension with whatever you guys decide on time frame and be able to come back to law enforcement, hopefully a better person through this time of suspension, and get the treatment, get whatever I need handled. So I'm grateful for this opportunity to talk to you. I'm grateful for Post letting me come to LEB, not LEB, I apologize, LEO, and be able to see what I can do training-wise and see what I can do better. So I'm grateful for this opportunity. Thank you so much.
Council.
Council, I'm sorry, I didn't introduce myself during Dennis Anderson. J.C. Jensen on behalf of Brandon Heffron. I would like the council to take into consideration prior recommendations they've made and how this incident at hand differs from those. The first being the September 24, 2014 incident involving Robert A. Carter. The allegation was assault DV, DV in the presence of a child, where 2 years was recommended and the council accepted 2 years. During the course of that incident, Mr. Carter pushed a chair his brother was on, which resulted in an injury to his brother-in-law. And these are just brief notes that I have down. I'm sure Marcus could give a more detailed explanation as he's looking them up. The other incident would be July 11th, 2014 with Jamie L. Olson. The charge was assault and public intoxication. 2 years was recommended and 2 years was accepted by the council. During that, Jamie struck a bar patron in the head with a cast. And the final one I'll reference is March 27, 2014, Cash Miller. The charge was assault and DV in the presence of a child. 2 years was recommended and accepted by the council. There, Cash hit his wife in the arm multiple times with the children present. I would argue that these are different than the case at hand, as this was two friends who were simply razzing each other, and there was no injury at all. Are there any questions the council has?
What was the testimony yesterday, Councilor, of his friend that he talked about? What is it that he stated yesterday? did the friend testify that he was injured by his assault?
No.
For the record, Director Haddon is going to recuse himself on this as well.
Address that question. They were going through room clearing training, if I understand it correctly, and they were wearing masks. And he had taken the mask and put it on the back of his head, you know, so the elastic is here. So it would have hit the mask, if that's helpful.
Who was the other cadet that reported this?
Did the complaint come from the cadet?
Yeah.
All right.
Yes.
Oh, no, there's another question.
I'll defer to the chief first.
I have a question. As a point of clarification, our notes show that he's still employed. What is his employment status today?
Terminated.
First week in September. Colonel?
So was this case screened criminally?
Jacqueline Moore with Post. Yes, we referred it to the agency where it happened, and the victim did not want to pursue criminal charges.
Marcus Yaki confirmed that all the facts were correct. This is summarized. Thank you. Do we have any further questions? Go ahead and call for a vote.
Motion.
Bruce Bailey has a
to accept.
Motion to accept. We have a second.
I'll do a substitute motion.
Substitute motion by Nate Mutter.
My motion would be to go down to the minimum, which is the 9-month suspension for the Category C.
We have a motion to go to the minimum, which is a 9-month suspension, which is a Category C. Do we have a second to that motion?
I would argue against. In essence, he attacked a fellow officer. They were in training, but to me that's a big distinction. if he's having problems in training, have it help him when he gets into the prison environment.
Chief Stratton.
Can I offer another substitute motion?
We have another substitute motion by Chief Marlon Stratton.
I would move 18 months suspension.
Chief Stratton has an 18-month suspension recommendation. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
We have a second from Sheriff Corey Pulsifer.
Any discussion? Seeing none, we'll call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Both.
One opposed, Bruce Bailey. Thank you.
Thank you. The next case is Jennifer Hicks. Jennifer Hicks, are you present? Do you have an attorney present with you? Oh, sorry, JC. Jennifer Hicks was an officer with the Woods Cross Police Department. She was terminated in January of 2018. The sustained charge was assault, domestic violence in the presence of a child, a Category C offense. Post recommends a 2-year suspension. There are no aggravators, no mitigators, and the criminal case was dismissed because I believe her husband didn't wish to press charges. On July 17, 2017, Jennifer Hicks was investigated for assault and domestic violence in the presence of a child. Hicks was involved in a verbal argument with her husband that became physical. The investigation determined Hicks had been drinking and in the course of a verbal argument hit her husband in the face with a glass mug, causing a laceration and swelling. The incident occurred outside the bedroom of Hicks' 8-year-old son while the son was in the bedroom. Hicks was charged with domestic violence-related assault and domestic violence in the presence of a child. The charges were dismissed after Hicks's husband refused to cooperate with the police or the city attorney's office. In a Garrity interview with her agency, Hicks stated she threw the glass mug down the hall toward her husband, but was unaware if it hit her husband. Hicks stated she cut herself with a piece of glass from the broken mug after seeing the laceration on her husband's face. When Hicks was asked if she told the officers on the scene when Hicks was asked if she told the officers on the scene she had fallen and cut herself, Hicks said she might have told them that. On April 23, 2018, Hicks's husband refused to cooperate with the Post investigation. On May 2nd, Hicks's attorney informed Post that she would not cooperate with the Post investigation. She failed to respond to the notice of agency action, and an order of default was signed by the administrative judge. Would you like an opportunity to speak, Ms. Hicks? Mrs. Hicks.
Again, Counsel J.C. Jensen, I'll be speaking on behalf of Jennifer Hicks. She appreciates your time and attention to this matter and agrees with Post's recommendation of 2 years and hopes you will accept the same.
Any questions for counsel? Seeing none, we'll call for a motion.
Move to accept.
Motion to accept from John Crowley. Second from Mike Haddon. Any discussion? Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you.
Thank you. The next case is Kyle Kent. Mr. Kent? I don't see Mr. Kent or an attorney representing Mr. Kent in the room. Kyle Kent is not employed. The sustained charges were willfully falsifies any information to obtain certification to class a Category C offense. Post recommends a 2-year suspension, and the guidelines baseline is 2 years. There are no aggravators and no mitigators. On December 7th, 2017, Kyle Kent completed an application to attend Post Academy training at a satellite police academy. In the application, Kent failed to disclose a theft he had committed in September 2017. Kent also failed to disclose a theft he had committed in 2015. Kent completed his Ethics 1050 class at the Academy in January 2018 and supplied an addendum to his application. The addendum made no mention of the thefts he had committed. In April 2018, he graduated from the Special Functions Officer portion of the Police Academy. On or about May 9th, 2018, he submitted a completed background investigation packet to a local police agency as part of a pre-employment screening process. In the background investigation packet, he disclosed his two prior thefts. In May 2018, he provided Post written notification, which only disclosed the theft that he committed in September 2017. So subsequent to the background investigation packet. In a post-Garrity interview, Kent admitted he committed a theft in September 2017 and another in 2015, but he said he did not put them in his original Post application because he had forgotten about them, and he did not believe they were a big deal. He failed to respond to the notice of agency action, and an order of default was entered. That's all.
Thank you. Mr. Kent, or your counsel. I don't see Mr. Kent rising. Go ahead and call for a motion.
I'd like a motion to accept.
Motion to accept by Sheriff Corey Pulsifer. Do we have a second? Second by Bruce Bailey. Any discussion? Hearing none, go ahead and call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you.
Mitchell Lane. Mitchell Lane present, or an attorney representing Mr. Lane. I see no one. Mitchell Lane was an officer with the Department of Natural Resources. He retired in February of 2018. The sustained offense was driving under the influence, a Category D offense. The guidelines call for a baseline of 1 year. And Post recommends 18 months. The aggravator is a high blood alcohol content. There are no mitigators. He pled guilty in a criminal court to impaired driving. On December 22, 2017, Mitchell Lane was investigated by an outside police agency for DUI. He committed a traffic violation, was arrested for DUI, submitted a breath sample which measured at 0.182 blood alcohol content. He retired from the department before the investigation was initiated. He entered a plea of guilty to impaired driving, did not cooperate with Post investigators, was not interviewed by Post. He did waive a hearing, and that's it.
Thank you. I don't see Mitchell Lane rising. Go ahead and call for a motion.
Do we know if he had a loaded firearm with him?
No.
We don't know where he did.
No, I'm sorry. No, he did not.
I'll move.
Dr. Budd, motion to accept. We have a second.
Second.
Second, Chief Stratton. Any discussion? Hearing none, we'll go ahead and call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Jared Martinson. I do not see Mr. Martinson or an attorney representing Mr. Martinson present. Jared Martinson was an officer with the Lehigh Police Department. He was terminated in June of 2017. The sustained offense, a Category D offense, was falsification or alteration of government record. Post is recommending a one-year suspension. The guidelines call for a one-year, baseline one-year suspension. There are no aggravators, no mitigators, and there was no criminal case in this matter. In May of 2017, Jared Martinson was investigated by his agency for falsification or alteration of a government record. The investigation determined that between March 26, 2017 and May 20, 2017, Martinson signed on duty with dispatch from his residence, which was located approximately 20 minutes outside the jurisdictional boundaries of his agency. On several occasions, Martinson did not leave his residence for more than 90 minutes after he signed on duty with dispatch. The investigation determined Martinson claimed the hours he was at his residence as hours worked on his time card and made no attempts to correct the information. During a Garrity interview with Post, Martinson admitted he signed on duty from his residence but said he was available for calls if he was needed. He failed to respond to the notice of agency action and an order of default was entered against him. Any questions?
Mr. Martinson. See, Mr. Martinson, we'll go ahead and call for a motion.
Move to accept.
Colonel Rappage, move to accept. We have a second.
Second.
Second. Mike Hatton. Any discussion? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Next.
Daniel McConkey. Daniel McConkey, or an attorney representing Daniel McConkey. I see no one. Daniel McConkey was an officer with the Unified Police Department. He retired in December of 2017. The sustained charge was false emergency reporting, a Category B offense, and obstruction of justice, a Category D offense. Post is recommending a 3-year suspension in this case. The guidelines baseline is a 3-year suspension. There are no aggravators or mitigators. On November 2nd, 2017, he entered a plea in abeyance to a Class B report emergency to police falsely. On September 3rd, 2017, Daniel McConkey called 911 and falsely reported a residential burglary in progress. McConkey did not provide his name to the dispatcher and stated he wanted to remain anonymous. After responding officers determined a burglary had not occurred, an officer called McConkey and asked if he were a neighbor. He replied yes. On September 7, 2017, an investigator called McConkey to get more details about his report of a burglary. McConkey admitted he was not a neighbor and stated an unknown neighbor called him and asked him to report the burglary to dispatch. On September 8, 2017, McConkey met the investigator at McConkey's request and admitted he falsely reported a burglary in an attempt to get police to respond and prevent his wife from engaging in an extramarital affair. McConkey admitted he did not receive a call from his neighbor like he originally reported to the investigator. McConkey retired from his agency in December 2017. In September 2017, charges were filed. In November 2017, he entered a plea of guilty to one count emergency reporting interference false report as provided in Utah Code 76-9202C, a Class B misdemeanor. The obstruction of justice charge, which had also been filed, was dismissed with prejudice. During a Garrity interview with his agency in Post, McConkey admitted he called 911 to report the burglary in an attempt to have officers respond to the house and stop his wife from engaging in sexual conduct with another man. McConkey said he and his wife were divorcing, and he recently found out she was having an extramarital affair. He waived his right to a hearing before an administrative law judge. Any questions?
Seeing none, go ahead and call for a motion.
Move to accept the 3-year suspension.
Mike Haddon, move to accept.
A second.
Second from Christy Morin. Any discussion? Hearing none, we'll call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Next.
Rodney Purvis. Rodney Purvis does not appear to be present. Rodney Purvis was a deputy with Salt Lake County Sheriff's Office. He resigned in August of 2017. The sustained charge was criminal trespass, a Category E offense. Post is recommending a 6-month suspension. The guidelines baseline is 6 months. There are no aggravators, no mitigators. He pled guilty to criminal trespass, a Class B misdemeanor. In July 2017, Rodney Purvis, a correctional officer, was investigated by an outside agency for criminal trespassing. The agency determined Purvis had entered a restricted area of a hospital and refused to leave or identify himself when asked by security. Purvis initially would not identify himself to the responding officers. He stated he was a sheriff's deputy but did not have any ID or police credentials. While handcuffs were being applied, Purvis rotated his wrists in a manner that would prevent the proper fitting of the handcuffs. When the officer attempted to straighten his wrists, Purvis stood up and said they were hurting him. He was taken to the ground and handcuffs were applied. Purvis was taken to the county jail for impersonating an officer and criminal trespass. The jail was able to confirm Purvis was a correctional officer, and the impersonating officer charge was dropped. During a phone Garrity interview with Post, Purvis admitted he used his wife's employee ID badge to gain access to a restricted area of the hospital on multiple occasions to use the employee gym. In June 2018, Purvis pled guilty to criminal trespass, a Class B misdemeanor. He failed to respond to the notice of agency action, and an order of default was entered. Questions? Sir.
Distinction here, where there was no aggravators, but yet you've got an officer that's actively resisting, has to be taken down. How is that not
an aggravator?
I think it's a good point. I think you make a very good point.
For the record, that was Sheriff Pulsifer. Any further questions?
Bruce Bailey.
I need to recuse myself.
Show for the record, Bruce Bailey has recused himself.
Any further questions for counsel? You have a substitute motion?
I'd like to make a substitute motion that we give him the max on the scale of the 1.5 year.
Sheriff Pulsifer has made a substitute motion for the maximum on this scale, which would be 1.5 years. Is that correct? We have a second. Second with Mike Haddon. Any further discussion? Just one moment. We're good. Any further discussion? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you.
Carrie Rosquist. Mr. Rosquist, I don't see Mr. Rosquist here. Carrie Rosquist is a Department of Corrections officer. A sustained charge was falsification of a government record, a Category D offense, and POST is recommending a three-month suspension. The baseline is 1 year. There are no aggravators, and the mitigators are that it's a fairly minimal offense. On or about October 30th, 2017, Carrie Rosquist was investigated for altering or modifying his own record in the OTRAC database. The investigation disclosed that Rosquist altered his own OTRAC record by putting a photograph of a dog on his record instead of a photograph of himself, and he deleted his legal status in the record. During Garrity interviews with Post and the agency, he admitted to altering his record without authorization. In September 2018, a hearing was held before an administrative law judge. The administrative law judge sustained the charge.
For the record, Director Haddon will recuse himself.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to have to recuse myself, but prior to doing that, I'd like to ask a question to Ms. Speedy.
Go ahead and ask a question.
Just for clarification, I would actually advise against that.
Okay.
Yes, I would advise against that. If you're going to recuse yourself, I'm going to
recuse myself from the vote of this because of the fact that I'm aware of this. But there's information that this council should be made aware of that's not in this report.
Again, this is just advice from the legal counsel for post counsel. I would recommend if you're going to recuse yourself to refrain from providing information or anything on this matter.
I have to recuse myself.
Sheriff Noel has recused himself.
Yes. As I read the packet that I was given, he admitted to two of the three, not three, that he hadn't changed his legal status. Which one's correct?
So he admitted that he altered the record. And the things that he did in the record were he admitted that he put the photograph of a dog saying something. He admitted he entered some comments into it, but he denied deleting the legal status. I'm not sure he knew what it meant, actually.
With that, we'll go ahead and call for the vote, or motion, rather.
Do we have a motion to accept?
I'd like to make a subsequent motion. I think to stay consistent with some of the other false reporting and falsification of government records and stuff that needs to be bumped up to a one-year suspension.
We have a substitute motion from Sheriff Corey Pulsifer to a one-year suspension. I have a second from Christy Morin. Any further discussion? Hearing none, I'll go ahead and call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Next. Thank you.
The next case is Michael Street. And Michael Street is here represented by his attorney, Mr. Jones. Michael Street was an officer with the Draper City Police Department. He resigned in September of 2017. The sustained offense was false evidences of title and registration, a Category A offense. The baseline is revocation. Post is recommending a 3-year suspension. There are no aggravators, and the mitigators are that it's the fairly minimal nature of the offense. He did enter a plea in abeyance, which was amended to a Class A misdemeanor. In March of 2017, Draper City Police Department initiated an internal investigation into Sergeant Michael Street for false evidences of title and registration. The department requested an outside agency conduct a criminal investigation on Street. The investigation disclosed Street purchased a truck that would not pass emission testing in Salt Lake County. He used the address of another Draper City police officer who lived in Utah County to register his truck in order to avoid complying with the emission testing requirement. Utah County does not require emission testing on diesel vehicles. The post-investigation disclosed that on or about February 23, 2016 and February 2, 2017, Street knowingly made a false statement or knowingly concealed a material fact in an application for registration of his vehicle in order to avoid complying with emission testing requirements. The investigation concluded Street violated Utah Code Section 41(1A)(1315) false evidences of title and registration. He resigned from the Draper City Police Department in September 2017. In September 22, 2017, he entered a plea of guilty in abeyance to the charge of false evidences of title and registration, which had been amended to a Class A misdemeanor. He waived his right to a hearing before an ALJ. Mr. Street and Mr. Jones.
No. Have we received any documents? Has post counsel received Chief Ining's letter? I was under the impression that they had. I have a copy. Do you want to see that?
You're welcome to
I
read
only
that.
Have a copy on my phone. I know.
You're kidding me.
I think I can zoom in. There we go. I'm just showing it to the attorney here.
Send it to Ms. Gomez and she'll print it out?
I will, yes. I'll send that after we talk so we don't delay proceedings. Is that fair?
But have him read the letter.
Oh, yeah,
let's have you read the letter, counsel.
That's what I'll do. Thank you, counsel. Thank you. My name is Jeremy Jones. I'm appearing on behalf of Michael Street. Counsel, this is maybe one of the most difficult cases that I've ever sort of been involved on as far as what to ask for the counsel. There's no dispute that the statute at issue here makes this a felony. I think that there is a philosophical debate about whether false evidence of title and registration should be a felony. That's probably not the place to have that here. And there's no dispute that Michael Street did provide incorrect address. That's never been disputed. He's always owned up to that from day one. The issue here is what should the consequence be? And Mr. Yockey may know better than I do, but I looked and I can't recall that this particular statute's really been considered by the council before. And so I would like to offer some context for the council in determining what recommendation it would make. We appreciate that POST has recommended 3 years. That, as I understand, is the lowest that they would recommend on a Category A. There's a couple facts that I want to offer to you. So number one, the PIA that was entered has already been dismissed. The PIA was to a Class A misdemeanor. POST has alleged an alternative count as the Class A misdemeanor. And right out the gate, I'd like to ask POST counsel to consider making a recommendation that's more consistent with the alternative count, i.e. the Class A misdemeanor. We'd ask the council to consider going down to 18 months, which is the lower end of that range. Mr. Street has been out. It's 17 months as of today. That would be one more month on a suspension if the council were to go to 18 months. Some context that might warrant the council's consideration there. Number one, I have had a hard time evaluating finding a case where this has been pursued rigorously by a prosecutor as a felony. I understand the statute's pretty black and white, but when we engaged virtually all the people that we had dealt with or encountered, this was pursued criminally as a diversion, if it was, you know, pursued as anything at all. And so the fact that this ended up being offered as a Class A is fairly difficult for us to swallow. I surveyed, and you'll just have to take my word for this, other defense counsel in town, and their experience was very similar. In fact, typically they expressed surprise that a prosecutor would follow this as a felony or as a Class A. That, you know, may carry limited weight with the council, but I think it's important to know given the nature of the crime that's at issue. I mean, this is it's a technical sort of paperwork violation. Falsification of a government record typically carries a year at this council. And there's no dispute that there's a reason, perhaps, again, philosophically, for the state of Utah to want to have this as a felony. But I think I'm very comfortable representing to the council that this is very rarely prosecuted as such. It's very rarely asked that felony-type consequences be paid for conduct like this. And something that the council might be interested in hearing is when we engaged with the prosecutor on this case, it took us quite some time. Eventually, we had a prosecutor admit essentially that this was overcharged and that it shouldn't have been pursued as a felony. As soon as we got that admission, that prosecutor was removed from the case and a new prosecutor was assigned who wouldn't budge. And so we won't talk about the reasons for that, but I think that it's indicative that perhaps the council should consider something less severe here. I would like to read the letter from Chief Ining. He dated this letter May 15, 2018, and I apologize the council doesn't have a copy of it in advance, but I will get it to you. To whom it may concern, Michael Street was a member of the Draper Police from February 2007 to September 2017. Mike served in several different capacities and ended his career as a patrol sergeant. Mike was a dedicated officer and a valued member of the police department. He was productive, motivated, and provided sound advice and instruction to his patrol teams. If given the opportunity, Mike will be an asset to another police department or any other professional organization. Sincerely, John Ining, Chief of Police, Draper. Draper, I think, backed Officer Street as much as it could under the circumstances. As you can see, I think there's a recognition here that this was a stellar career and can continue to be an excellent career where my client would provide a value to any agency and the public at large, given the history that he's demonstrated with Draper. He is a resource. He did resign from Draper. He has lost that job as a consequence of this. He's paid a heavy price. And we would I would submit to the council that a three-year suspension is too heavy under the circumstances to keep an officer of this caliber out of this profession. We would ask, again, just to reiterate, the council to consider viewing this under the alternative count that is in the notice and recommending a low-end suspension, which is 18 months, on the guidelines provided for a Class A. I'm happy to answer any questions the council has regarding some of the legal aspects. Otherwise, I'll allow Mr. Street to talk.
We have a question. Bruce Bailey.
With the other cases that you were referring to, did they also include the supervisory role where you put another officer between a rock and a hard spot?
Yes, I understand that was a consideration that was evaluated by Post, and the investigator or Ms. Vitti could comment on this. I think the findings of the investigation were that this was a sort of an offhand conversation. There was no supervisory pressure that was advanced. As I understand it, they did look at that angle to see if there was sort of an untoward leveraging of his supervisory capacity, and to my understanding, that was not a concern.
Victoria?
And regarding, irrespective of, you know, the philosophical differences and the views on prosecutorial discretion, isn't it true that a diversion would have essentially the same effect? Your client would still be here as a result of a violation of state or federal law?
Yes, there's no dispute about that. My request to the council is, what is the appropriate consequence here? So we've never argued that this was a mistake. We've never argued that it happened. We've never disputed that. I think the question really is, not did this happen, it's what should the consequence be in considering the other consequences that he's had relative to his career.
So the discussion about the diversion versus conviction really doesn't really have a role here because we would have landed at the same juncture irrespective of how that was handled.
Perhaps. I think the context matters just because it's atypical that this is pursued in such a serious fashion. And I think that that matters when the council evaluates, well, what is the appropriate consequence? If this was the type of crime that was regularly, consistently pursued as a felony that should have had felony consequences, I think that would be a different discussion. But this is something that, in my experience and the experience of the individuals that I've surveyed, law enforcement officers, defense counsel, et cetera, is not typically pursued in a manner that carries serious felony consequences.
Counsel, did you say that he's been suspended for 17 months or has been without?
He's been out of employment for 17 months as of today.
In any law enforcement capacity?
That's right. He was suspended by Draper 17 months ago, just about as of today.
Thank you.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak to you today. First off, I want you to know that I have accepted responsibility for my actions. And anything that I say to you today is not to make an excuse for any of those. I've been completely honest with everything up throughout the entire situation. The post-investigation, I want to thank Sergeant Barnett and his team for the fair consideration in which they handled themselves and everything else. I bring all this to your point, this was a mistake. And I've ultimately paid with my career. You know, the day I was approached by Chief Ining and Draper about the situation, I was absolutely surprised. I asked him if he was actually joking when he explained the severity of what I had done. I never imagined that I would ever put my career in jeopardy over a registration or any other violation of the law. Being a law enforcement officer is the only thing I've ever wanted to do. I'm a third-generation cop in my family to serve the citizens of the greater Salt Lake area. You know, my entire career was focused around traffic, accident investigations, and patrol. And I was a supervisor over all those areas, including motors. I spent a lot of time with the Highway Patrol as an instructor, pretty much building my resume as far as I could go and be a part of anything that I could do. There wasn't ever a time where I ever stopped or during an investigation where I ever looked at somebody's registration or the address on their registration and compared it to that of the driver's license and to know that there was actually a law. And I know that being naive is not a defense in anything that we do, but it was never anything that I ever contemplated during anything. I just wanted to kind of give you a little bit of a backstory as to what's not presented in the investigation. Just so that you can hopefully understand why, you know, this happened like it did. My wife and I had just recently purchased a house, and in order to qualify for the house, I ended up selling my previous vehicle, and in order to, you know, make the qualification necessary. Once we moved in and closed on that home, I began to look for another vehicle, and that's when I found the diesel pickup truck that was in question. I bought it from somebody who lived in Utah County, and now knowing that the emissions laws there are different than here in Salt Lake, when I bought it, I wasn't privy to anything that had been done to it previously. I left there. Once I had all the paperwork, I took it down to the diesel shop in Draper to have the emissions and inspection done. That's when they came back to me and told me that there was a missing piece in the exhaust reflected as a DPF filter, which is required in Salt Lake County. Basically, they told me that I was going to have to spend between $3,000 to $5,000 in order to put the stock exhaust back on the truck in order for it to pass Salt Lake County emissions or register the vehicle in a county outside of Salt Lake in order for it to pass the emissions. Again, I had no idea that there was any kind of a law, against this sort of thing. I know other officers, firefighters, regular people who have all utilized an alternate address. Again, not to make excuses for any of that. So in order to remedy my registration issue, I approached a friend who was also, somebody who worked at the police department. I consider him a friend. We're still friends, and had told him about the issue and asked him if I could temporarily use his address to register my vehicle until I could come up with, some money to replace that exhaust. And this really does boil down to a dollar amount, and my wife and I had put every dollar that we had into our house on the down payment, and literally I can show you bank records from the last 18 months that, or even back to where I had that truck, that never had that much money to be able to make those repairs. You know, as far as the rest of the details, I'll defer to the investigation. I've never denied any of it. I was completely honest and forthright about it. This was clearly just a mistake that I had made and a decision that I made that I fully regret. What I'm asking from the council is a second chance to get back to a life as a police officer. It's truly the only thing I've ever wanted to do. I haven't tried to hide any of this, and you know, sorry. This time that I've been out of law enforcement has given me a chance to reflect on things that I can improve, and I've actually utilized that time and gone to work in a senior living facility. You know, I have a very strong desire to serve and to help people, and you know, I've had to explain myself even to the health department with the state of Utah over this whole situation in order to be granted clearances to be around, you know, the elderly and helping their families, and you know, and everything that I learned as a police officer and as an administrator, you know, has prepared me to help them. You know, senior living has given me an opportunity to continue to help, more specifically the elderly and their families. I've had to learn a great deal of patience when dealing with the failing health of the residents that I serve and also with their families. It's fulfilling work and I enjoy the time that I spend with them, but there is definitely a missing piece to my life, and that is the honor of wearing that uniform. So in closing, I humbly ask you for your consideration in allowing me to resume my career as a law enforcement officer. I know what I did needed to have consequences, but being away from law enforcement for almost 18 months now, I can assure you that I will never stand here before you again. I'll take any questions. Thank you.
Can you clarify why they went for 3 years on this, as far as the post went to the...
As I've said in the past, I will never go outside the guidelines. Again, this is... Guidelines are a document you have approved. Again, those guidelines are researched based on charges, but I will never go outside the guidelines, hence the three-year recommendation. But it's up to you what you guys decide.
Thank you. Dr. Butt.
He's been off the job as a law enforcement officer for 17
months. Is that correct?
I would offer a substitute motion of 2 year suspension.
The substitute motion from Frank Budd for 2 year suspension.
Second.
We got a sec, 2 seconds. We got a Christian Moore. Any further discussion?
I'm not gonna vote in favor of that. I'm here, counsel, just like all of you, to voice my opinion about this. We are so far over the top on this for this man. It's actually embarrassing to me that we've got a police officer that is as good as this man is over this kind of a violation. This is craziness. I'll never support this whatsoever. This is way over the top for this council to be considering something like this for this man.
Sheriff Noel.
Or any citizen, for that matter. This is not right.
You have a substitute motion.
Yes, I would like to make it a six-month.
You want to clarify he's been 6 month suspension?
Yes.
Have a motion for a 6 month suspension?
Sheriff, I absolutely understand, and even as I take your comments, that I think that this is a difficult case given his track history and those kind of things. I will say, I'm standing looking at this document that says, I agree not to contest the allegations in the notice of agency action, and whether we're looking at it as a third degree felony or as a class A, it includes a statute that he has pled to that says I knowingly engaged in this conduct. I think that it's really difficult, and as you point out, either for this council, for law enforcement officers, for citizens, to number one, be in a position where you're coming into the criminal justice system, but by that same measure, I don't know what else we do in light of our mandate, which is to issue, I guess, suspensions, revocations based on violations of state and federal law, and where we're looking at a scenario where there's questions about the degree, and that's absolutely that, but I think that there's also a case to be made for as it sits, because even though it was amended down to a Class A misdemeanor based upon the counts and the alternative, it was the exact same conduct. So if he admits to the conduct, he admits to the third degree felony. And I think in a prior case, we even, I believe the Kent case, no charges were even filed in that matter. So I don't think we should be driven so much by the level of conviction. I think that we need to be driven by whether or not the offense has taken place. And you're absolutely right. This is entirely a case of what's appropriate. But I feel like we get a little bit maybe outside of the lines, especially when there's information from people that comes in. Because, and maybe I misinterpreted Mr. Street, but it sounded like at this juncture he's saying, well, no, I didn't really know that this was a crime because I never pulled somebody over for it. But yet we have this where he's acknowledged he knowingly engaged in an offense. So
we do, and Mrs. McFarland, I understand exactly what you're saying. 26 years as a police officer. Thank heavens police officers in Utah and around are given discretion. We come to here as a council and we listen to each individual case. He explained the circumstances. Director Stevenson told us that we listen to those circumstances and then we make a decision. And the decision for us to go with those recommendations are not right. Not considering this. He made a mistake, and we should use discretion, and we should say, you made a mistake, but to hammer him like that is absolutely not right.
I think this falls in line really closely with how we've kind of handled the breach of hunting and fishing laws in the past, because there are some serious consequences there, as there are with this, but in the overall scheme of things, we're talking about something vehicular in nature. We're not talking about assault. We're not talking about... I don't know. I'm kind of somewhere in between. So.
Chief Stratton.
I agree with what's being said. I'm somewhere, I guess, in the middle. I think Mr. Street has acknowledged that he made a mistake. He's paid a significant price, not only him, but his family. And I personally think he deserves a second chance. I've worn the badge for 34 years. I understand officers make mistakes. I also think that we need to let them back up. So I guess, like I said, I'm somewhere in the middle. I would offer an alternate motion of 18 months of what is being suggested.
There's an alternate motion of 18 months by Chief Stratton.
Can I withdraw my motion? Because I like that motion better than mine.
For the record.
Thank you, Dr. Rutt.
We have a new motion from Chief Stratton for 18 months. Do we have further discussion?
I'll second.
We have a second from Nate Mutter. Any further discussion? Hearing none, we'll call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Opposed, one. Sheriff Cameron Novell. Thank you.
James Terrell.
Mr. Terrell, or your counsel?
Mr. Terrell and his attorney are present. James Terrell was an officer with the Granite School District Police Department. He resigned in June of 2017. The sustained offense was falsification of a government record, a Category D offense. Post recommends a one-year suspension. The guidelines call for a one-year suspension as a baseline. There were no aggravators and no mitigators, and there was no criminal case in this matter. On or about April 6th, 2017, James Terrell was investigated by his agency for providing false entries on his time cards. Terrell's agency received information that Terrell, who was assigned as a school resource officer at an area high school, was signing on duty at his assigned time. However, he did not show up to duty to his duty location until long after. The chief of police assigned two of his sergeants to watch Terrell's residence to see when he was signing on duty and when he left his residence. Yeah. On April 7th, 10th, and 11th, 2017, Terrell signed on duty at about 7 a.m. However, he did not leave his residence until at least 1 hour had passed. Terrell's residence was outside the school district boundaries and not located in the same jurisdiction as the high school to which he was assigned. As part of the investigation, the agency's chief requested an audit of Terrell's time cards, and dispatch logs for the 2017 school year. The log showed Terrell consistently signed on duty at approximately 7 a.m., but did not arrive at the high school where he was assigned until a significant time later. Terrell resigned from his agency on June 30th, 2017. During a Garrity interview with Post, Terrell said he experienced family problems, which prevented him from getting to his place of assignment on time. However, Terrell failed to inform any of his supervisors of the personal difficulties and did not make any attempt to change the time cards to reflect the actual hours he spent at his place of assignment. On August 10th, 2018, a hearing was held before an administrative law judge. The administrative law judge stated that sustained the offense and found that Terrell had violated Utah Code 5362111D as outlined in the notice of agency action. Mr. Terrell or Mr. Jones?
Counsel, thank you. Jeremy Jones again on behalf of James Terrell. Counsel, there's never been a dispute that my client missed time. That's not in dispute. Essentially, what we'd ask the counsel to consider is what the ALJ considered. There's not a question that he missed time. There's not a question that the time cards were incorrect. The question was whether he knowingly and with purpose that it be taken as incorrect, sign off on those time cards. The ALJ answered that question in the affirmative, but the ALJ acknowledged that there was some difficulty here created by the lax way in which Sergeant Terrell's agency tracked time, the way that they were fairly permeable with dealing with flex time and whether or not time needed to be pre-approved. Those were some contributors. Now, that didn't change the ALJ's findings. We're not going to try to call a spade a club there. But the ALJ did recognize that there was at least some difficulty in the time tracking that was contributed to by the way in which the agency tracked time in the first instance. Because of that, counsel, we'd ask that you consider some reduction in the suspension in your discretion. Thank you.
Like my attorney said, there was no intent here to deceive. There was some mitigating circumstances that contributed to this and some contributing circumstances from the department I worked for as far as timekeeping. I'm not blaming them. This is on me for not arranging it or for not communicating it properly with my direct supervisor. For 25 years, I've been a police officer, and this is hopefully the first and the last that I'll ever have to appear before Post Council. This is the last place I want to be. Had those mitigating circumstances, obviously in hindsight, had those mitigating circumstances still occurred, I would have handled it a whole lot differently than I did. I did try to make amends with, as far as the time was concerned, but for whatever reason, those amends weren't taken. I just appear before you and ask for your leniency. Thanks for hearing me.
Any questions for Mr. Terrell, Ms. Counsel?
No.
Victoria?
What about the incident where Sergeant Orton confronted you? You said there was no intent to mislead or anything like that, but can you give some more light on that?
On the one occasion,
when I was called out, I did try to cover myself with the sergeant. on that one occasion. Otherwise, I had told the truth the entire time.
Any further questions? Ms. Beatty?
My advice would to limit you to the findings of facts and conclusions of law.
Director Haddon has a question.
It's a clarification question. So with a one-year suspension and you resigned last year, would that just allow him to go right back into law enforcement immediately? Is that?
Yes.
Okay.
That's assuming he's not in any other law enforcement kind of job in between.
Yes. You're not serving in any other capacity? Or haven't since you've been?
I've been out for 17 months, the same as.
Were you off with pay during that time?
For the first 2 months, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I would like to just quote from the judge's opinion, from Judge Catton's opinion, and I'd like to address a comment made by Mr. Terrell. And I'm reading from page 9 of the opinion. Judge Catton stated, a second piece of evidence that is critical to this knowledge element was the testimony of Sergeant Orton of the Granite School District Police Department. Sergeant Orton surveilled Terrell on April 10, 2017, and testified that he called in on duty at 7.06 a.m. and left his house at 9.02 a.m. Orton followed Terrell to the high school and talked with him in the parking lot. When approached by Sergeant Orton, Terrell remarked that he had forgotten to radio in his arrival at the school an hour earlier. Clearly, that was not true, as Sergeant Orton had just witnessed Terrell leaving his house and knew Terrell was home an hour earlier. The fact that Terrell felt the need to misrepresent his location to his supervisor is indication that he understood his long mornings, quote, on duty at home were inappropriate. Since he had the awareness, he must have also known that his absence record did not correctly reflect his actual work hours. There's additional information in this, but I just want to note that he clearly misrepresented with the knowledge that he was misrepresenting.
Thank you.
As reflected in, the judge's
Terrell.
Opinion.
I just clarify.
Counsel. I appreciate that. We're not going to dispute that that's what the finding was. What I would note for the record is that Judge Catton also observed that the surveillance dates are outside the scope of the notice of agency action. That's on the bottom of page 6. All three dates he was under surveillance are outside the period of the alleged violations and are not direct evidence of wrongdoing. Prior to the portion that Ms. Vitti quoted, the judge also said that we provided competent evidence that GS Granite PD was lax in their timekeeping practices, that there is no doubt that the use of the absence record is a very confusing way of handling time cards, and it is also clear that because of those factors, James did not really take the process very seriously. So, again, we don't dispute that there was a finding here. My clients owned that to you. But we would like the council to acknowledge that even the judge here acknowledged that there was some contributing factors to this mistake happening in the first.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, but I need to address this one because we need to have a complete record. And if Mr. Jones is going to quote from that portion of the opinion, then I suppose we need to continue and read what Judge Catton said after that. And also I'd like to point out that he was not with the Granite School District for 25 years. He was with, I believe it was West Valley Police Department prior to that, and had knowledge of timekeeping responsibilities when you're on duty, when you're off duty. But to read the opinion after the portion that Mr. Jones quoted, it says, however, the sheer number of days that the absence record incorrectly reflects his time worked is an overriding factor. There are simply too many days where it is apparent he logged on to work from home and then arrived at school hours later. It is not reasonable to believe that he was not aware that for many of the days, the 8 hours of work time assumed by a blank day on the absence record was not correct. He must have known that the absence record was not correct on numerous days throughout the relevant period. It appears he may not have cared, or that maybe he didn't think it was important. But this is different than not knowing as required by statute. I won't continue, but the opinion continues in that vein, and I think you have, am I correct that you all have it?
Yes.
So I won't quote any further, but I'd like the record in this particular instance to be accurate as to what he knew and what he did intentionally.
Any questions for Ms. Vitti or legal counsel? Seeing none, we'll ask for a motion.
I move to accept.
I vote Bruce Bailey. I have a motion to approve. We have a second. John Crowley, any discussion? Hearing none, call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, the next case is Jason Whittier.
Mr. Whittier, or your counsel?
No one is appearing. Jason Whittier does not appear to be here. Jason Whittier was an officer with the deputy with the Cache County Sheriff's Office. He was terminated. The offense that was sustained was animal cruelty trespassing, a Category E offense, and unlawful trapping, a Category F offense. The baseline is 6 months suspension, but Post recommends 1 year. The aggravators in this case is that there were multiple events. There are no mitigators. On October 2nd, 2017, he pled guilty to aggravated cruelty to an animal, a Class B misdemeanor. On October 29th, 2011, he pled guilty to unlawful methods of trapping, a Class B misdemeanor. And on October 26th, 2009, he pled no contest to criminal trespass, a Class C misdemeanor. On July 3rd, 2017, Jason Whittier was investigated for animal cruelty. For aggravated animal cruelty, the investigation disclosed Whittier left his department issued canine in his patrol vehicle with the windows rolled up and the engine turned off for several hours. A necropsy later determined that the canine died of heat exhaustion. During a Garrity interview with his agency, Whittier admitted he accidentally left the canine in the vehicle after training and then left with his family for several hours. The investigation sustained the allegations of animal cruelty and not taking proper care of department-issued equipment. His employment was terminated in August of 2017. Whittier did not cooperate with the criminal investigation. Charges were screened with the county attorney. On October 2nd, 2017, he entered a plea of guilty to aggravated cruelty to an animal, a Class B misdemeanor. On August 31st, 2017, Post initiated an investigation and discovered that Whittier had two previous criminal convictions, which had not been reported to Post. On October 3rd, 2009, he was charged with criminal trespass, a Class C misdemeanor, and on October 26, 2009, he entered a plea of no contest to that charge. On October 29, 2011, he was charged with unlawful methods of trapping, a Class B misdemeanor, and on November 30th, 2011, he paid the bail forfeiture for that charge. He did not cooperate with the Post investigation, and he failed to respond to the notice of agency action. A default order was signed and entered.
Thank you. I don't see Mr. Whittier. We'll go ahead and call for a motion. Motion to accept. Do we have a second?
Second from Corey Pulsifer. Do we have any further discussion? Seeing none, I'll call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Thank you.
And the last case today is Anthony Williams, represented by his counsel, Ms. Jarvis.
For the record, we'll have Nate Mutter recuse himself. Thank you. Thank you.
Anthony Williams was an investigator, an agent. I don't know the correct term. He was employed by the Utah Attorney General's office. He resigned in November of 2015. The sustained charge was reckless endangerment, a Category A offense. Post recommends revocation. The baseline in the guidelines is revocation. The aggravators are that there are multiple offenses. The mitigators, none. He pled guilty on April 13th, 2017. He pled no contest. I apologize. He pled no contest on that date to the Class A misdemeanor of reckless endangerment. On July 31, 2015, Anthony Williams was investigated by an outside police agency for intoxication and disorderly conduct. During the investigation, officers determined a previous domestic violence incident had taken place on December 28, 2014, where Williams was audio recorded by his wife during an argument. Williams' wife reported that during the argument, Williams pointed his department-issued handgun at his head, pointed it at her, and then pointed at his head a second time, and pulled the trigger. The gun was not loaded. Williams admitted he pointed the gun at his head and pulled the trigger, knowing it was unloaded. Williams denied he pointed the gun at his wife. On August 26, 2015, the case was screened for the county attorney, and aggravated assault charges were filed on Williams. On November 12, 2015, Williams resigned from his agency. On April 13, 2017, Williams entered a plea of no contest to the amended charge of reckless endangerment in violation of Utah Code Section 765.112, a Class A misdemeanor. During the post-investigation, Williams' wife disclosed that Williams hit her in the face, which caused a black eye, on or about June 7, 2015, and dragged her by the hair, pulling it out from her head, during the altercation on December 28, 2014. On May 16th and August 23rd, 17, during Garrity interviews with Post, Williams admitted he pointed his department-issued handgun at his head, pulled the trigger in an effort to prove to his wife that he was serious about wanting his cell phone back. Williams denied assaulting his wife during their marriage. Williams denied causing any injuries to his wife during their marriage. On June 21st, 2018, a hearing was held before Administrative Law Judge Catton. Judge Catton subsequently issued findings of fact and conclusions of law stating that Williams violated Utah Code 536211D as outlined in count 3 of the notice of agency action. Counts 1 and 2 were not sustained.
Counsel Lindsay Jarvis, present on behalf of Mr. Williams. Before we dive too much into this, I want to make a couple of things very clear. Although I appreciate Ms. Vitti's recitation of the facts, the only charge that my client is present for is one count of reckless endangerment to which he entered a no contest plea to for holding a weapon to his head and firing it, given the fact that she was in the room at the time that that happened. When the incident was alleged by my client's wife, ex-wife at this point, she actually alleged numerous allegations against my client. One thing that is important to recognize is that the incident to which he pled guilty to occurred in December of 2014. She did not come forward until July of 2015 on this particular allegation. At the time that she did that, she came forward with a number of recordings because she had been preparing for divorce. And coincidentally, right after this case was brought to the police, she filed for divorce and the house was sold, to which she received a six-figure receipt for the equity that was in that home. At that time, there were a number of allegations made, at least seven, all of which ALJ Catton was prepared presented with, and all of which he determined to be absolutely untrue. So Post's efforts to try and amp this particular charge up were seen through as the victim came and actually testified, and ALJ Catton had the opportunity to determine and assess her credibility. In this case, what we have is evidence of a man who was incredibly intoxicated, who was suffering from a severe addiction, who was binge drinking at his home away from his job, and in the process of doing so during a marital dispute, held a weapon to his head and dry-fired. My client has taken responsibility for the fact that this did in fact cause fear for his wife, and that is the reason for the entry of the no contest plea. But one of the things I would ask Post to consider as Post counsel is making the determination as to what is appropriate on this is that Post has come in and indicated that they're recommending a revocation on this particular case. Their basis for the revocation is to say that this is a crime of violence. And Mr. Yockey, I don't know if you're prepared to maybe address this, but we would actually argue that this is not a crime of violence. This is a Class A misdemeanor, but there is no indication that an act of violence was committed in this particular situation. This was a situation where my client was actively suicidal and under the influence, and at no point in time was there any sort of harm that was projected onto anybody else. The reason that we're asking for a deviation on this was because if you look at what a Class B offense constitutes, we're looking at a 1.5-year suspension up to a revocation. And that is where we feel that this is actually appropriate. This is a no-contest plea, so in essentially a Class A conviction, which carries with it. The only reason that it's now being bumped up to a Class A is because there is an allegation that somehow this involves an act of violence. And I believe that's something that you, as a counsel, can consider to determine whether or not you think these facts actually constitute violence. In preparing for today's hearing, I went back and reviewed a number of the situations that Post counsel has heard. And to be honest with you, just sitting here today, listening to a case where an officer hit her husband in the face with a mug that resulted in a laceration, that ended up with a 2-year suspension, clearly an act of domestic violence. This case was not. I want to be clear. It was originally charged, and when the evaluation of the witness or the ex-wife was put under pressure, the county attorney's office didn't just reduce it, they amended the charge. This is a one count of a Class A misdemeanor reckless endangerment that does not contain domestic violence as an antidote. March 21st of 2018 is one of the cases that I reviewed on this one. In that case, it was Officer Brock. Marcus, tell me if you have any concerns on this, okay? My understanding is that he was actually charged with intox and an aggravated domestic violence offense. On that case, he pushed his wife onto a couch, pointed a gun, and also brandished a weapon. This counsel chose to issue a revocation, obviously because that case involved violence. On June 14th of 2018, Officer Chadwick was involved in a physical domestic altercation with his wife. At that point in time, as they were engaged in a physical activity, she actually fell backwards, hitting her head on the headboard, which resulted in her being knocked unconscious. And this counsel actually imposed a 3-year suspension on that particular case. Last year at this time, I was present for an individual who lit himself on fire. And during that particular case, he was charged with malicious burning. And this counsel actually stated that in determining what the appropriate sanction was for him, that we needed to take into consideration the traumatic work and the dangerous work that these people are out doing every single day, talking about the impact that it's having on our folks. This particular situation, and as it was fleshed out at the ALJ, this was a suicide. This was an active suicide attempt. What wasn't told to you is that his wife had actually taken his phone, and in his intoxicated state, he did put a gun to his head and said, yes, I wanted her to know I was serious, that I wanted my phone back. And in the recordings, what you hear is that this taking of the phone goes on for 3 days. 3 days, multiple recordings, none of which were turned over to police until she was prepared to actually file for divorce. And so what we're asking for here is for you to deviate. My client can address his issues in getting help with the alcoholism problem that was without question a problem. But he is here, he is of sound mind, He participated in and prepared at the ALJ hearing where he denied the allegations and specifically said he was incredibly suicidal on this day. He wanted to die. He did not want to be in this marriage, which I think all parties would agree was absolutely toxic. If you look at the ALJ's finding, he says over and over again that there is significant amounts of verbal abuse in this case, but there is nothing to indicate that there was any sort of physical abuse in spite of the number of cases and the number of allegations that we had to fight to prove that that wasn't the case. And so because of that, I would ask for the 3-year suspension on this particular case, give him the opportunity to continue getting the help that he has been seeking, and give him an opportunity. This is someone who has 16 years of law enforcement experience, and as a result of the PTSD and the stress that he suffered, turned to alcohol. No question that alcohol consumption was improper, and the binge drinking resulted in somebody that he does not want to be. And listening to those recordings and hearing the person that he was on those recordings has been devastating to him. Since that time, he's actually moved to Idaho. He's living with family members. He has not been employed in law enforcement, and he continues to seek help and is actually working as a sponsor and doing very, very well in helping other people with addiction.
Counsel, was there a diagnosis of PTSD?
On him?
On him.
I don't know if there was an official diagnosis. No, I can't say that we've ever had him evaluated for that. He did go in for a fit for duty evaluation. Marcus, are you okay to discuss this, the fit for duty evaluation?
I'm going to leave it up to you and Ms. Vitti in regards to the fit for duty. It's.
We would go into a closed session, but then if we go into a closed session, then all parties would need to be excused, including post and
defense.
So if we go into a closed session, then everybody would need to be excused, except for the council members.
I'd like to take a motion for the council if you'd like to go into closed session to discuss this further. Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
We would actually need a motion first.
We can get a motion to go into closed session.
I'll move.
I have a motion from Dr. Budd. We have a second.
I'll second it.
We have a second from Cameron Noel.
Just for clarification purposes, because this is a public and open meeting, I just need clarification as to why we're going into a closed session. Is it to discuss the character and
competence of a individual, all right?
Yes. Competence and character of the individual in question, Mr. Williams.
I'll include that with the motion if it's necessary.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you. With that, we'll go ahead and those in favor?
Yes, we do have
to sign that. I will have to go into closed session, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That will go ahead and move into closed session. Those that are not part of
it. So at this time, I will have all parties except for council members and staff, Julie, and myself, be excused from this.
Where he's recused himself, would he be excused as well? For the record, Mr. Mutter is excused as well. I'd like to call post counsel back into session. The record, it is 11:45 on September 20th. 12:45, sorry. I apologize. 11:45. I apologize. Ms. Beattie? So at this point,
So Marcus Yockey on behalf of Post Council, just had a closed session in regards to.
Don't touch. You're fine. I can hear you.
Okay. Closed session in regards related to the character and competency of the respondent officer, Mr. Anthony Williams.
Okay.
Any, I guess we're at the question phase or where?
Yeah, well, I believe we left it in a question for Mr. Williams.
Or well, let me ask you this. Do you have any more questions for me after looking at the competency or, I guess, the fit for duty evaluation that I can assist with before we let Mr. Williams address you?
The only question is there something more current, a more current evaluation?
No. So what had taken place is when the incident came out in July, so the allegation stems from December of 2014. The Attorney General's office didn't catch wind of it until July of 2015 when the number of allegations were made. At that point, he was sent in to do the evaluation, and that's what you reviewed was from 2015. So we don't have anything more current, but Anthony can explain to you what has happened since that moment, if that makes sense.
Okay, thank you. That'd be helpful. Mr. Williams.
Thank you. My name is Anthony C. Williams, and I want to thank you for the opportunity I have to speak today. I've had a long time to think about what I wanted to say, and one of the things that I would like to express to you is this process has been very difficult because I've had to be accountable for my actions, and that was a hard thing for me. I read this evaluation and how much denial I was in, and I was blaming other people for my problems when the reality was I was very depressed, and I was self-medicating with alcohol to the extreme. I was in a marriage. I was not happy in that marriage, but that does not justify my actions and the way that I abused alcohol by any means. Again, I am a firearms instructor. I know firearm safety. And those actions were completely wrong of me. But I am taking accountability for it because they were my actions, no one else's. It's been a very difficult time, having to face that accountability, and for me in my recovery, it is about accountability and acceptance. Because until you can be accountable and accept what you've done, you cannot move on. And one of the things that I have to accept is this, my actions, I don't think I would have stopped drinking had this not happened. And unfortunately, it had to happen the way it did, but that was how I got help, and that's how I was able to get into my recovery. And I can't change that they happen, but I can be accountable for them, and I can move beyond them. It was, getting out of law enforcement is not easy when you've been in it for 16 years. And just... I have a very strong desire to get back into law enforcement. And I feel like I have a lot to offer in that capacity. I currently work for a counseling agency and I'm a certified peer recovery specialist. So I work with people in addiction. And it's been a growing process for me to have to recognize my own addiction. And like I said, be accountable and not make excuses, not blame other people, not blame coworkers, not blame friends, spouses, but to accept that I have this addiction and being able to move beyond it. And I would ask for a second chance to be able to work in law enforcement, if that is possible. That is the desire of my heart. I hope you would consider that. Again, I cannot change the actions that I have done. But I can be accountable for them. Again, I thank you for this time. I don't think I have anything else. If there's any questions.
Any questions for Mr. Williams? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and call for a motion.
I have one clarifying question for counsel. Whether it's viewed as either a Category A or Category B violation, both the 3 years and the revocation are within the available range. Is that right?
Right.
Okay.
Yes, the difference would just be the base.
But the question that I presented for the counsel is whether or not you determine this to be a crime of violence. That's actually put it up into Category A, Category B, and not to foreshadow, but we have multiple reckless endangerment cases coming your way that we're going to be making the same argument on. If nobody's getting injured, then the question is does the presence of a weapon, especially in this case, a loaded weapon, then automatically make it a crime of violence? I think what we need to look at more is if somebody was injured and there was harm that was done to someone else, and in this case, I think, as I mentioned, this was suicidal. This was during the course of an argument, but his intention was to harm himself in self-defense.
Counsel, you said his intent was to harm himself, yet you also said that he knew the weapon was empty.
He later said he knew the weapon. What had been described, and I don't know if we want to retry the case, but there
okay.
was Russian roulette going on. What was the outcome?
Okay, thank you.
If I could, I also wanted to on the criminal case, he was put on probation, supervised probation. He was ordered to pay a fine and take care of everything. He was actually released from probation. There's been no problems. That criminal case at this point is closed. The only issue is restitution, and the victim has never made a claim. So for criminal purposes, that part has been taken care of.
Thank you. Any further questions? That will go ahead and call for a motion.
I'll make a motion to accept the recommendation.
I have a motion from Colonel Rappage to accept the recommendation. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second from Bruce Bailey. Do we have any further discussion? Hearing none, I'll go ahead and call for the vote.
My question following up on the original one was, are we accepting the recommendation as a Category A offense? Or are we accepting the recommendation as counsel has requested as a Category B offense, but at the high end of the range?
May I restate?
Yeah, please.
I'd recommend we accept the recommendation of revocation as a Category A offense.
That's what I said.
Oh, second, I would comment that any time a firearm, regardless if it's loaded or unloaded, is used for force or fear of people around, even for yourself. So there's no other reason to pull a gun and put it towards your head, so I'd have to recommend
for the class A, is that correct? Need the
Category A. Go ahead and we have a second. Second by John Crowley. Any further discussion? Seeing none, I'll call for the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you.
Thank you,
counsel.
And that's it. We have no more disciplinary cases. That was the last one.
Thank you. Director Stevenson, I think you had a piece of business.
Thank you, Chair, counsel. Yeah, if I could get soon-to-be former Chief Marlon Stratton to come on down. You know, I attended a good friend's retirement, and I get a little melancholy when I start seeing the old guard leave our profession. And he put his hand on my shoulder and said, "Dude, you are part of the old guard." So, this is hopefully not farewell, but I appreciate everything you have done for us. I'll tell you one thing I've been very impressed with is your ability to take a big decision and just break it down into a very objective format. We've dealt with a couple of cases, unfortunately, but I just always appreciate your professionalism and the way you've conducted yourself. And I feel comfortable speaking for this post staff and the council. Consummate professional. I appreciate it. And good luck in your retirement.
Thank you.
We got you a very expensive pen. Notice the fine craftsmanship. You can barely read it. But it's the thought that counts. This is a pen that can write in space.
Wow.
Yes, so the only way to find out if I'm lying to you is if you...
Let me know how it goes. go
to space, so thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We really appreciate it. Thank you.
Could I make one real quick comment? Chief Stratton, I've known him my entire career, and he has been a mentor to many of us in law enforcement. I know the sheriffs and Frank Budd have worked very closely with Chief Stratton through the Chiefs Association. I believe he hired me, or was one of the people that was on the board when I was in Ivins, and I thank you for that, in spite of probably having better judgment at other times. But you've been a huge support of law enforcement. Every time we have the Chiefs or Sheriffs Association in St. George, you are always the first one to step forward to host those meetings and give the opportunity, as well as Sheriff Pulsifer. But we always thank you, and while you have a great replacement, you won't be replaced. So we thank you for that.
Awesome. Just real quick, just reflecting on this meeting, and specifically the disciplinary, Captain Sparks and I were talking this morning about disciplinary, and they are hard. And some of you may say it's a play on words, it's semantics, but I will tell you at least my intentions and my staff's intentions is about correcting behavior. It is not about discipline. It is about correcting behavior, either through through deterrence or general and specific deterrence. That was for Dr. Bailey. But it's an important role that you guys serve, and it's a difficult one, especially that the cases we've seen today. And so I appreciate the discussion and the decorum in which it is presented. I promised that I would provide, at your request, a financial report. I'm not soliciting anything. I'm just reporting numbers. This year, we are appropriated. That means the legislature has appropriated a certain amount, which is $4.6 million. That doesn't mean that Post gets $4.6 million. That just means that's what we can get. However, the statute reads that we get 18.5% of that surcharge account or restricted fund, or the appropriated amount, whichever is less. So the figures I'm going to give you are what we received last year, and the gap is between what we actually saw and I was actually able to spend up to the appropriate amount. And last year, we were a million shy of that number. Right now, we are down 5 positions within Post. And I got to commend my staff. They do a fantastic job, but it's getting to the point where we're just being reactive. And I need a full budget. And those 5 positions, to fill those, one is a curriculum developer, which we are in dire need of, especially with the way things are changing, and a couple other positions would equate to about $600,000 when you factor in benefits and salary. That's not talking about the other initiatives that we would like to do within service. As you have seen, we have diminished the number of courses that we offer in service. Well, sometimes that 40-hour requirement is getting difficult to reach with departments with, very small budgets, and they need people out there working. So, I view it as Post mission to supplement that training so they can get that 40-hour training requirement. Just a couple of quick numbers, and again, this is all my staff's doing. Fiscal year 2017, our costs for personnel and other related items was about $3 million. In 2018, 2.7 million. This year we have recognized a carryover of $200,000, but most of that has been on the backs of my employees and just vacancies. And anyway, what I want to reflect here is that we are doing the best that we can to cut down costs and fit within that budget. Keeping in mind, we get $500,000 from the uninsured motorist or InsureRight account. That's for people who don't have insurance, or the Colonel can probably explain better how that account generates funds. That is set to horizon in 2020. So with that $500,000 last year at close to $1 million, that put us up to $3.6 million. If that goes away, then I'm finishing about $500,000 in the black. So that is my report to you. Any questions?
No, sir. I did have one other question in relation to the chief's positions on the board. I just received a message from Val Shoup. It says, Chief Self has not heard from on the recommendation from post counsel as far as being placed on the accepted as the position for to fill the post position. Does that make sense?
Yep.
And then additionally, I think there was another request for Alan Swanson to replace Chief Stratton. So, however,
have they applied online?
I think these were for the post positions. To
sit on the council.
To sit on the council. Yeah,
they still need to fill out an application online.
I'm not sure that they're aware of that.
So. Ms. Gomez will send them a link.
Okay. All right. Okay, I will after. Thank you.
And then that is pending governor approval.
Okay, got it.
Yes.
He was on the council also. Has he been replaced?
Yeah, that was the...
That's what he's talking about.
He's representing the association?
Yes, so for me, Chad Self is the one they recommended. And then for Chief Stratton would be Alan Swanson. Was the recommendation. Of course, the governor has that authority. I just was trying to make sure that we were clear on that.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I was going to ask you that.
Okay, so. Thank you.
And then also we need to replace Commissioner Gibson, who's now with Natural Resources, and Mayor Molesky's spot. We need a mayor as well. So if you can think of any names, please forward them to me, and we'll reach out to them and go from there. Any questions regarding budget? Okay. I'd like to thank Chief Carpenter. He participated in the selection process for Lieutenant Moore's position, and I appreciate you giving the time and insight. It was very helpful. And then also I want to thank Dr. Matt Checkitz. He has been a huge asset to me, dealing with just challenges within our profession. And I would encourage all of you, if anything, he's great at triage. He can refer you to some good referrals in your area. But I appreciate your expertise and just always willing to go above and beyond what you're expected to do here. I also wanted to bring up, and I've talked to a couple people on this council, Sheriff Rivera brought up the idea of lowering the age requirement for correctional officers from, I think, 18 or 19 years of age down from 21. At the moment, I am working closely with Weber State and Dr. Bruce Bailey on this matter. And really, what we're looking at is the developmental phases of the brain and whether exposing someone at that age to an environment that can be very ugly at times. Are we just creating more problems down the road if we are exposing them to that environment? But Dr. Bailey, I mean, been fantastic, kicking me research, and I'm in the process of not writing a white sheet, but a more of an outline of this research that he has forwarded to me. Doctor, do you have anything you want to add?
Yeah, I've contacted national experts dealing with adolescence development psychology. I've heard back from three, including the top guy in the nation. All three said this is a bad idea. The top guy said, not only is it a bad idea, it's a dangerous idea. Research tends to support that. I'm still poking around trying to find more empirical support, contacting other experts, but so far it's been unanimous. Just don't do it.
He's qualified to make that statement. I am not. But I've been reached, I've been contacted by a couple of senators about this idea. There is a bill open. But my position, I met with Sheriff Rivera and her staff, and my position is this. Until I can stand before a group and say, with education and evidence behind it, that it's not a good idea, I am neutral at the moment. I can't support it because right now I'm just going off my spidey sense. It just doesn't seem right, but I cannot outright oppose it without doing the research and working with Dr. Bailey and various other professors. So that is the position on it. I don't think it's proper to have a discussion about it, but just something to think about as a possibility down the road. And I understand that we find ourselves in a very unique situation when it comes to vacancies and trying to get people into this profession, recruiting. I'm apprehensive about supporting a policy that is just going to come about because we find ourselves in somewhat desperate times. This will pass. You know, we kind of go in the opposite direction of the economy, and you know, I'm not an economist, but you guys can read the news. So I just want to make sure we proceed cautiously and are smart about it, period. So any questions about that topic? Not in discussion, but maybe...
Just for clarification, you're free to have a discussion, just any voting would have to be up
there. Right. But I'm not prepared to answer any sophisticated questions. Maybe Dr. Bailey is, but we're dabbing into the research together. So, see none. I just want to get on the record about applications, especially with the struggle to recruit people into the profession. It sucks. Sorry, I probably should have said something else. It is very frustrating when you have somebody apply and they lie on their application. Departments go through this hiring process and then they do something stupid and lie on the application. I hate dismissing people for that. So please, on your end, if you can remind these applicants that we keep previous applications and we compare them to the one they currently have submitted to us. It's just a stupid reason to not be admitted into the academy. And it saves you money and selection and stuff like that. So, anyway, I appreciate what you do, and Chair, I'm done.
Thank you, sir.
Oh,
go ahead, Chair.
One question. During the break, I had a little bit of discussion with Marcus Yaki about the cases that come before us. I would ask that in the future, and any future cases, that if there is information from outside agencies or outside prosecutors, not necessarily the entire report, but at least that this committee is able to know that an outside agency reviewed that case. And if that comes before us, we may be able to say, what was the outcome of that? What did that prosecutor from that other agency recommend? Because I know there was a case that did not happen. I don't know whether that would have changed the body's decision in that, but at least we should be made aware that there was other things brought up.
Okay. And we can look at that on the investigative end of it, yes. But good counsel. We just got to be careful that we stick to what's on the notice. This body has suffered the consequences of introducing new information that was not reflected in the notice, and that just provides a legality issue. And so anyway, I appreciate all that.
On the notice, and what's really, I think, difficult is we have the notice, and especially the ones that go to the ALJ hearing, they have the factual allegations. Let's say some are sustained, some are not, right? And in some instances, some of the unsustained information is maybe an aggravating or mitigating factor. And so even though they weren't, it doesn't go to an allegation, it's still something that we can consider. I think the difficulty that at least I'm seeing, and I think probably a lot of other people are seeing, is when you know, counsel comes in and presents an entire slew of information as mitigating information that we're unable to verify. So I don't know if there's something that could maybe be recommended to counsel for those appearing, that if they're going to come in and present information that goes kind of above and beyond or outside the four corners of that notice, that they need to maybe provide their own kind of documentation or something of that nature.
On the officer's side,
yes.
Right? Okay.
Yes.
So maybe as part of a warning, not a warning, but just guidance, if you're going to say something, bring some evidence that the council can have. The new lieutenant will get right on language for that. So. But good point, both of you. Anything else? A date?
For our next meeting?
For the next meeting.
Recommendation?
Talking December, right?
December, yeah. 13th. December 13th. I am out of town. But if they...
6th.
Yeah, what about the week? First week?
Week.
Six would be good.
Yeah, Thursday. We have graduation.
We have graduation?
On when?
December 6th.
Can you do it on the 7th, which is a Friday?
Well, we could bump this meeting to 1300.
Can't, the 7th is the Sheriff's Association meeting.
So if we do the 6th at 1300, that would give us a chance to graduate this class and then come right down here.
That would work because I've got SAR reimbursement up at the Capitol with the UMS. It starts at 11, so
which means Linda also has it. So,
huh?
Yeah.
So you're good for 1300?
The 6th would work for 1300.
6 is a good thing.
Well, about 1400. Just sometime in that afternoon.
It goes too late. I go to City Council closed session.
Right now. So I don't think we're done with SARs at 2 o'clock.
Which means you're missing the attorney for Provost.
I need to be there.
Okay. All right. What about the 5th?
The day before on the 5th?
But yeah, 5th looks good. Does that look more good?
I won't be here, but that's the way it goes.
I'll be out of town.
We will be mourning. Frank?
I know. I like a life of it.
So, well, we got to make sure we have a quorum.
Yes.
First of all, I think, yeah. What about the 4th?
I'm just tied up Tuesdays and Wednesdays.
And you're gone the entire week? 12?
20th.
I'm out of town.
You know, let's just do a Christmas morning.
I'm out of town on the 12th, too.
I'm just tied up every Tuesday and Wednesday.
Every Tuesday, Wednesday? What about the 13th?
I'm 12th, 13th. I'm gone that...
Oh, is that where we started?
Yep.
Yeah. I've come full circle.
It starts looking better after you look at other days.
What about first week of January? Or maybe the second week of January. We've done that before.
I'd rather do that.
Okay.
Third
or the 10th?
Third.
That works.
Third?
Third.
Everybody, third?
Going once.
Going once, twice, sold.
10 o'clock, right?
10 o'clock. January 3rd, 10 o'clock.
Same place, right?
Yes.
I have to clarify.
One little mistake.
Unless somebody would like, well, yeah, let's do it here if that's okay. So, yeah. This is,
Will legislate? Oh, okay, that doesn't start right.
So I was going to save my farewell to Captain Kelly Sparks until December, but you guys have been so rude to not allow a meeting in December. This will be the captain's last council meeting before he becomes Sheriff Kelly Sparks of Davis County.
That's right.
Yeah.
That'll be an easy job. I'm sure we'll be seeing you.
I don't know if I need to say anything to this group, but I will, about Kelly and my relationship with him. And you know, when I always tell people that I made two of the best decisions of my life are named Kelly, my wife, and Kelly Sparks. He's done a fantastic job for us and has really mentored me. I mean, I was 34 when I was appointed director, and he tolerates me. He gives me that look like, what the heck are you thinking? But at the end of the day, I feel very good about every decision that we have made together, and he's going to be dearly missed, at least on mine. I'll probably still interact with him on the other side. But I thank you for your efforts and the work that you do for Post. You're going to be a fantastic sheriff. So, anyway.
With that,
I'm done.
Thank you, Director. With that, we'll go ahead and ask for a motion to adjourn.
So moved. And second.
If there's no second,
we're out of here.